Fire Service Court Radio. My name is Brad Pinsky, and I'm your host today of this edition. With me, I have Kurt Verone, Chip Comstock, and John Murphy, each attorneys well known for their dedication in the fire service industry and representing clients in fire topics. Today, we're going to talk about issues related to physical fitness and medical exams. This is an important topic. It deals with a life safety issue, both of our firefighters and also of the public. What we normally do is we go around and take comments, and I'm going to start off. I'm going to start with Chip Comstock today. And Chip, let me throw a question your way on this topic. Are medical exams even necessary in the fire service?
I think just looking at the annual statistics regarding line-of-duty deaths and realizing that on average 50% of the line-of-duty deaths are physically related, and by that I mean, you know, heart, stroke, it behooves us not to ignore this and to focus on having firefighters submit to exams.
No question. And let me turn now to Kurt. Kurt, what is the responsibility of a department to provide? We know there's NFPA 1582, which provides a model protocol, a model standard for physical fitness, but what is the responsibility, either legal or moral, to provide physical exams for firefighters?
Well, I think the moral question, in my mind, is a lot stronger than the legal aspect, but I think that as fire service leaders, we have an obligation to make sure that our personnel are fit and medically capable of doing the job, and it's a safety issue for the individual member. It's a safety issue for the members who have to work with that individual. And it is it's a challenging thing, but it's no more challenging than a lot of the other things that, you know, we have to deal with. From the legal consequences, I see two big legal consequences to failing to comply with medical requirements, and one coming from a negligence aspect. And, you know, the typical scenario would be a firefighter goes to a fire, has a heart attack and dies, or has a stroke and maybe lingers and then dies, and the widow or the family of the firefighter then would sue the fire department for negligence. Difficult case, and that's why I think the moral aspects are a little stronger than the legal aspects, but, you know, the widow or the surviving family members would sue the fire department for negligence, and basically the crux of their case is that the NFPA recommends that firefighters have periodic medical exams. You've ignored that. As a fire department, you have ignored that. If you had done what you should have done, if you had given my husband an annual medical exam, you would have found out that he was medically unfit, and he would still be alive with us today. So, you know, you have that one scenario. The other aspect to the legal end of it involves OSHA requirements, and OSHA basically requires anyone who's going to be using a respirator that they receive an annual medical clearance on their ability to use a respirator. So, you know, those are the two legal aspects, the negligence argument and also the OSHA argument for a fire department to perform a medical exam.
Yeah, and it seems to me, you know, we're all firefighters for our listeners. We've all been firefighters for too long. And it seems to me that if you have somebody in your department who is just obesely overweight or a prior condition of a heart attack or heart condition or whatever other condition renders him unsafe or unfit for duty, that you're endangering not only the public but your fellow firefighters, both who may be working with him if that person goes down and now we have to perform a rescue, or, you know, for the RIT team that has to go in and pull that individual out. You know, I've seen firefighters through the fire service, and we all seen them. You look at them and say, how is anyone allowing that, I don't care, volunteer or employee, to remain a firefighter? They're a danger to the public, they're a danger to ourselves, and they're a danger to the other people who might have to go save them. John, let me ask you a question. One of the things we'd like to do is help our listeners draft policies to address these scenarios. And I would suggest, I see it all the time and I get many requests, do you have a physical fitness policy, or do you have a physical testing policy let's go around the horn, so to speak, and throw out some suggestions for those who would want to create physical fitness or physical requirements for the fire department or ambulance service or any other type of emergency medical industry or emergency service.
Sure. there's a couple opportunities, and I'm going to kind of do the lawyer answer and dance around the question at first, then we'll get to the kind of the nut of what you're trying to talk about. I think there's two opportunities for fire departments to screen individuals coming in to their organizations, and the second part is how do you implement a policy that requires annual or periodic physical evaluations? And then what do you do with the individuals that you find that have a significant medical problem? How do you deal with those particular individuals? And then how do you set up, a policy for regular fitness? I think that the first part, we have a unique opportunity to screen people on the front end. You know, firefighter candidates that are coming in should be provided a comprehensive physical by a physician who's qualified to do that, which would encompass, the cardiovascular, which Chip, I think, indicated earlier. If you look at statistics, last year our firefighter fatalities, over 40% of our firefighters died from cardiac arrest. Those are kind of detectable and correctable medical problems. So, in our organization, we would have somebody come in to get the medical physical as part of the testing process. And then if we found something out of whack with these guys, they had maybe a conduction defect, they're hypertensive, they're overweight, we would pass on those individuals, give them through the medical, through the physician, some sort of corrective actions that they can take, and then they can retest at a later date. So we've screened it. I think we have an opportunity to screen out, potential medical issues. I think with that, when you get into the organization, if you don't have a policy already set up, you'll have people that first will claim a protected status. As an example, somebody who's grossly overweight, are they a protected class? And I don't believe that they are, because I think that there's a public safety risk and a risk not only to themselves but fellow firefighters. So you need to kind of work through that challenge. The second challenge is with labor. My organization, it took me 2 years to get a medical physical program in routine basis, because labor thought that management was going to use this as a tool to terminate firefighters. For 10 years, you're arguing that's a crazy position to be, because you spend a lot of money on firefighter training and getting the firefighters in, and you don't want to terminate because of a certain medical condition. An individual, you spend $100,000 investment on getting them to where they are. So what we ended up convincing labor all about is the relationship is between the physician and the firefighter, and if there's a correctable medical condition, then let's take care of it. That's what we're all about. Bought off on it, and so right now the organization has a voluntary program, and we've affiliated with a sport medicine group here in Washington that specifically focuses performance for firefighters. And so I think, a family practice doc could probably do it, but all those guys don't understand, what we do, what firefighters. So you need somebody that's qualified in performing those exams. The last part is, how do we keep firefighters fit? Firefighters come into the organization, they're at the top of their game. They're generally young, they're in good shape, they want to be firefighters, but over time, and injury takes its toll. And so what are we doing for, mandatory fitness? Many departments have implemented policy that, sets aside a certain amount of time during the day for firefighters work out. That could be in the morning, could be in the afternoon, could be at lunchtime between calls. It doesn't make any difference when they do it, as long as they do it. And then equipment provided. And a lot of departments, to be honest with you, have crummy equipment. And, there's a lot of gyms that go out of business in your community, and you can buy equipment for like 2 or 3 cents on the dollar. And what we're seeing now is that the peer fitness firefighters are trained in more core training and less, you know, big muscle training. You know, I mean, it's good to look good on a calendar, but, you know, does that do you really any good on the fire ground? And so in our organization, we removed all the big weights, got the physio balls, got the stretch cords, got people trained to be the trainers. And then kind of the third leg of that stool is nutrition, and we have nutritionists on board. So, you know, how do you implement that sort of stuff in your organization? Very difficult to do that. There's a lot of policy examples out there of successful programs across the country. I would advise our listeners to, you know, put out a request or an inquiry through fire engineering. If anybody has anything, please send it to us because we want to start a program. The other problem is, what are guys doing off duty? Are they working out? Are they smoking? Are they eating lots of red meat? You know, are they engaging in unhealthy practices that, you know, compound their problems when they come to work? And the issue is, you know, when they're under demand, a big load on a working fire, or, you know, as we see in the reports, you know, going to, coming home, laying down in bed, having a heart attack or a stroke. I mean, we can't generally control off-duty behavior, but if we set a good model through policy and by example, I think we're going to see a lot of fires living to the end of their career in great shape. So,
one of the things I'd like to suggest, Kurt, I know, and we're probably all familiar with 1582 and the categories of Class A, I think, exclusions, that if you have certain conditions, you cannot be a firefighter. But one of the things, we have to think a little less traditional for the moment about just the career departments where a firefighter is a firefighter. And I want to talk for a second about the volunteers and suggest a policy for the volunteer departments as well. Volunteers, at least in my area, we don't just have interior firefighters. We have scene support, which used to be called exterior. We have fire police. We have chiefs. We have operators or chauffeurs or drivers. And my belief is that one size does not fit all. Typically, the fire police are the older members. They used to be interiors, but they're older. Typically, operators are the more senior firefighters, at least in New York State, it seems that way. The interiors are the younger, and the exteriors are a mix, or the scene support. But when they go to a physician, the physician does not actually understand what they are. So simply going, and I see this all the time, and I really don't approve of it, they simply say, go to a physician and get certified as physically fit to be in the fire department. And maybe they say physically fit to be a firefighter. But I don't think most physicians have any clue what these jobs entail. So if I were, I'm an interior, but if I were a fire police and I were an operator, chauffeur, if I went to a physician and said, listen, I want to be an operator, I think a few things. One, I don't think the physician has any idea what that is, generally speaking. And I don't mean these specialty house groups that do a lot of firefighter physicals, but your general physician. And two, I don't think they have any idea what the job entails, and I don't trust and we shouldn't trust the individual to relay what that job entails, because they may have a specific condition that they want to get around. So my suggestion is this, when writing a policy, that if you have different categories, such as you're in a volunteer department, and you have different categories of jobs and roles, you should have one list, a long list of requirements. And I'll give you an example for each category. For instance, fire police must be able to hear an audible tone from X distance. They must be able to see in night and day from X distance or have X vision. They must be able to wear 30 pounds of gear. They must be able to bend over. They must be able to lift certain weights, maybe 30 pounds, which would represent maybe cones, or bend over so they can put flares. You describe the duty. Conversely, 1582 does a nice job, I think, and I want to kind of borrow from that. An interior firefighter must be able to wear 60 pounds of gear and obviously be fit test certified and medically fit to wear a breathing apparatus. But they must be able to climb a 24-foot ladder wearing 60 pounds of gear, carrying a 15-pound saw, and then perform 10 minutes of hard labor on the roof. I think those types of descriptions, even for EMS, for example, must be able to mentally fit so they can tolerate traumatic conditions You know, going so far as that, I think that gives a physician now saying, you know, I don't know what your job is, but now I know what you have to do on the job. You know, operators have to be able to pull, you know, 50 pounds of hose and walk or pulling that hose for 30 feet, whatever it is, allowing the physician to understand what your job entails. And now they can say, you know what, the stress on your body, you are not able to do this job, so I'm not going to certify you for that job. That's my suggestion. Chip, any comments really about anything?
Boy, that's sure open-ended.
Don't ask him that question.
Yeah, really. I think we'll all get in trouble. You know, you were talking about it, and I agree with you, but in setting up a program, one of the things that fire departments have to look at is, you know, how thorough and how effective do they want the program to be? You know, I run into a lot of departments, and in Ohio we have a rule, it's an Ohio Administrative Code provision that says that everybody that is expected to use an SCBA has to be medically certified. And a great number of departments ignore that, and many who want to comply with it simply say to the firefighter, you know, go to your doctor and bring a note back that says that you're physically fit.
That's exactly what we do.
And
I hate it.
And what good is that? I mean, it may be technical compliance with the law, but it really doesn't benefit anybody. It certainly doesn't help that firefighter. It doesn't help the fire department in that you want to make sure that the people who are going to do whatever work it is that's assigned are physically capable of doing that. So I'm an advocate. If you're going to do this program, and this goes hand in hand with what Brad said, get a physician who understands what it is expected of the firefighters. And it doesn't have to be a physician that specializes in this, but if he does enough of them, that physician may become a specialist. He will learn and be educated from the fire services, you know, what are the standards for 1582, but also what are the requirements of the job, as Brad described. So I think one of the big things that could really be beneficial is finding a physician and working with that physician on an understanding of what is expected of firefighters and what is expected under NFPA 1582. And in the long term, that relationship will really be beneficial. The other thing is, if you can develop some trust when those issues that come up, and they always are, what happens, what do you do when somebody fails a physical? And that's what's got to be addressed. And particularly in the collective bargaining situations, when you're dealing with the unions, that's always going to be a big issue. But I think if people have trust in the person that's doing the physicals and they understand it's not punitive and that they're trying to really protect everybody through negotiations and through discussions, all of those issues can be worked out. We do annual medical certification, very intensive. I mean, include EKG, you know, X-rays, and follow NFPA 1582 very closely in my volunteer department. And it's been very good. We've had some success stories where some medical conditions have been caught because of those physical exams. So I'm a big advocate of it, and I think it could work in the volunteer department.
And Kurt, let me ask you a question. Let's talk about...
Hey, Brad, yeah. Brad, before you... Let me weigh in on what Chip just said, because I think that's important, and we may miss a point. One of the things that you may want to do is identify a physician in your community that can be the fire department doctor or physician. I think that does two things. One, I think it adds to the elite status of the physician. You know, he's affiliated with, you know, a public safety agency, your fire department, which is good for his business. Second, over time, the familiarity with the firefighters actually do not only help us on the front end when you firefighters coming in and the physician knows what you're doing, but if you have a who's injured on the job, there's an expectation that at some point the firefighter will come and seek a medical release from a physician. And like Chip said, you know, a note coming back from a doctor doesn't really do anything for you, because we've had people getting notes, and a lot of guys will doctor shop either to stay out on disability for a long period of time or come back too early. And so if you have your doc that knows what, you know, you guys do, that could be an advantage, a very strong advantage to not only your department, but the firefighters individually.
Yeah, Brad, I'd like to jump in on that one, too, and I think I agree with John on that one 100%, and that, you know, 1500 envisions a fire department physician sort of being the one of the key players in managing this, the medical aspects of the health and safety program. And that second part, I mean, yes, it's good to have a physician, a single physician that assists us in the evaluation of candidates. candidates and the annual medicals. But on the back end, so many times when we have firefighters come down with, maybe it's an occupational illness, maybe it's not, but they come down with some sort of an illness, and we're trying to connect the dots here. The normal docs don't care. They really don't care what caused the particular illness. All they know is, this is what I got to do to treat it, and they're not interested. And firefighters, we're concerned about what caused this. And I think back to one incident we had in Providence, where when I was a safety officer, we had four firefighters all go blind in their left eye in a three-month period. Four firefighters. They were all firefighters. No officers, no captains, lieutenants, chiefs. Four firefighters, all on the same shift. So there's about 90 firefighters on a shift, rank firefighters. And they all went blind in their left eye. And none of their individual doctors really cared. They said, well, you know, we're treating. I mean, they cared that in the terms that they were treating them, but they weren't interested in helping us find out what was causing it. And we had to get, you know, a specific occupational health doctor. But that's a perfect example of where a fire department physician can get in and start to look at various trends that may be coming out in the individual firefighters. But if everybody just goes to their own doctor and comes back with a note, we're going to miss those types of trends.
I absolutely agree. Let me ask this, and I like how John said he wants to weigh in on this. I wasn't sure if that was the point here. let me ask this. So now we have firefighters who are non-compliant. What do we do? Let's take out what do we do with the collective bargaining agreement. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I see some struggles among my union clients where, you know, they're trying to stand up for their brother firefighter, saying, well, yeah, we want to give them some time, or, you know, we want to give them an appeal of the physician, or whatever they're trying to do. But on the other hand, I always know they're saying, you know, this guy is not fit to save my life, or I am not strong enough to save this 400-pound guy, or this guy's going to have a seizure right in the middle while he's on the line or going up the ladder or cutting the roof or whatever, and they don't really want him either. So what remedial measures, and let me narrow the focus down a little bit. I'll go back to Chip. What remedial measures do we take for those conditions which are medically treatable, controllable? Let's talk about weight. You got a guy who's too far overweight. We know he's overweight. The problem I know people are going to have is they're going to be saying, when we implement this policy for the first time, John Smith right here isn't going to qualify. He's going to look at it as a personal attack. So what are we going to do for compliance? You know, what are we going to do? And let's talk about the overweight thing, because I think overweight has got to be one of the main issues here.
Why do the vendors at some of our favorite fire shows sell T-shirts in size 7X?
Yeah. Or why do we give, you know, maybe there's a wellness issue. Why does everybody bring donuts and cookies? I mean, how fat do we need to be?
Well, Brett, can I weigh in on that one?
Because weigh in?
This is going to take us in a different direction, but I think weight is a red herring. I don't think that's the real issue. I think the real issue is the ability to do the job. And the more we focus on weight, the more it tends to become this unsolvable problem. Because, you know, is this guy overweight? Is he not overweight? Is 300 pounds, 400 pounds, 500 pounds? You know, what's the limit? Height, weight, and all that. Body fat, mass index, all that. That's all a red herring. The issue is, can you do the job? And we need some sort of a periodic physical evaluation. Okay, so you have the medical evaluation that a doctor does, but then you have a physical evaluation about whether or not the person can perform the duty.
That is part of our physical exam. I mean, we do the physical that includes the things that I've talked about. We also have an aerobic aspect of that, where the physician along with some physical therapists do an evaluation annually, which in some injury cases has helped us because they've questioned whether or not it was pre-existing condition, and the fact that they passed a physical and were capable of doing all of those things demonstrated that it was nothing that impaired them. So that's going back, Kurt, to your position about tracking things. That's been helpful.
But you're all ducking the question. What do you do now, well, for whatever reason, that the guy doesn't qualify?
You don't let it get to that point, Brad. You have that question answered ahead of time. You don't even try to implement this policy until you know the answer to that question ahead of time.
Well, and I think, and Brad's question, I think, the way I interpret it is what would be the recommendation for that? And how we started it, because we had those same questions, you know, what are you going to do? And my answer to that is we're not trying to be punitive, but we want to try to work with you to resolve the issue. And where we put it is on the doctor. We said, you know, the doctor's got to work with us and make the call. I'm not, as the chief, medically capable of making a decision as to whether or not that person is capable of performing the jobs or what it's going to take to get them there. If we have an issue with high blood pressure or it's a person with diabetes, we can work with those conditions and get those taken care of. If I've got a person, I've made it very clear, if a doctor tells me that this person has a heart condition and if they continue in the fire service, there's going to be a substantial risk that they're going to die of a heart attack, I'm not going to have that person perform. I mean, they can go out of their career. That's when you have to start talking about disability. If they're a volunteer, it's like, I'm not going to put you in that position. And there are people out there, for good or bad, who, having significant medical conditions, will still want to do firefighting. I mean, they love that much, and they're willing to take that risk. I'm not. And so
let's go back to the question, I think, you know, the red herring component of it. There's a lot of industry that looks at weight, body mass index, or however you want to clarify it. The military is real big about weight issues. Airline industry is real big about weight issues as a safety thing. And I think we may be, again, missing the point, is that we need to take a look, and I think Kurt alluded to this, is what's the essential functions of their job, and can a firefighter do that regardless of body size? And so if they can do that particular work, are they qualified, to continue on as a active firefighter? If you take a look at, you know, people that are just morbidly obese, you know that empirically, based on studies and research and the fatality events, is that, you know, people who are morbidly obese have many other medical problems. And, you know, are people that are morbidly obese qualified to work? Can they do the essential functions of the job? And that's where I think it puts you, Chip, as the fire chief, in kind of between a rock and a hard spot, only because, you know, the department needs to outline what the parameters of the essential functions of the job. Your physician needs to outline, you know, what it takes medically to get to that point. And if you find something that's a problem, you know, like you talked about cardiac, you know, you do heart stents, you can do bypass surgery. There's a number of firefighters out who have had that. But people who are morbidly obese, I think this, we're trying to watch what Brad's problem is. What do you do with these guys that are morbidly obese or the 500-pound guy? You know, if they can do the job, do they stay? Do they get medically cleared by the physician? Yes or no, do they stay? But the whole thing deals, again, on the front end, what policies have you put in? What science are you using to determine fitness? And, you know, it's a big problem, and it's been solved in many departments and other industry. This is not just isolated to the fire service. It's across the board.
Sure. I want to suggest zero tolerance with a lot of help. Right? And this is going to be controversial. Why not? We're allowed to do this. I want to suggest, obviously, no one's going to disagree. If the physician says you're not fit, you're not fit. But my answer to the question is, look, if you're a volunteer, you're done. Right? You are done for whatever position you're not qualified for any position, until you can meet those requirements. And on the collective bargaining side, on the employer civil service side, same thing. You're done performing the job. Now the question is, how long do we hold you? And what do we do for you while you're not performing the job? You know, I'm not going to get into whether weight or heart condition or controllable diabetes or anything is a disability, but I think the department has the obligation, both volunteer and career, has the obligation to put a program in place that you can participate in, keep you around for your health and safety, and get you through that program and make sure you're cooperating, participating, and doing well with the program. If you're treatable, or I don't want to say curable or solvable, but if you can lower your weight or strengthen or control your disease or whatever it is, then we have an obligation through a wellness and a physical fitness program to help you through that. And I think that should be part of a collective bargaining agreement, that you give the firefighter time. But at the end, it all comes down to what is the individual willing to do to help himself. And there, I would suggest that collective bargaining agreements, volunteers, all these have a time limit. If you are not making progress, if you are not getting through the issues and you are not working, then we're not going to keep you around. And we have the right to fill your position, to release you once you show that you are not helping yourself. Because frankly, you can't just turn a blind eye and you can't allow these people to go on forever not helping themselves. Is that over the line, anybody? Is that right on? Any thoughts?
I agree. I wrote an article, I think last year, talking about fitness and a difficult journey. And one of the issues is, when is the cut point? When do you end somebody's career because they're just incapable of doing a job due to physical limitations? And I think we need to take a hard look at that because, you know, as chief officers and as organizations, we need to, you know, give a period of grace for somebody to, you know, come into compliance. And then if they're able to do that, then they need to go. And I'm on, your side, Brett, this time, that we need to have a policy in place that says if somebody does not comply with after a reasonable time, and it could be a month or 2 months, depending on what it would take, that need to be out of the organization. And I am fully on board with that because these people have a great tendency to die on the job. And some guys, and there's no empirical studies, but some people would rather die on the job because if they go out on a medical disability, they get nothing under worker comp or under the retirement system. Dying on the job, and this is maybe a morbid statement on my part, but dying on the job provides more benefit to survivors than if they went out on a disability and look for other work.
Sure. Let's do closing statements. Try to keep them under a minute. I'm going to start with Chip, and we'll go around.
Well, we're aiming this discussion towards fire officers and firefighters, and for firefighters, we've already hit on the fact that you want to make sure that you take care of yourself and that the people who you rely upon in getting the job done are also taking care of themselves. But ultimately, the decision on this comes down to the chief's recommendation to the board of whether it's city council, the mayor, who have to assume the responsibility for implementing this program. And whether or not that happens, I don't know, but I think every chief out there has a moral legal obligation to the firefighters to do everything he can to make sure that those people who are called upon to serve the public are physically capable of doing the job.
Kurt?
Well, guys, I think this is one of those leadership challenges that is it's really easy for a fire chief to look the other way at and say, well, I have other things I can focus my attention on. And the firefighters many times don't want to get involved in this issue. It's too hot a topic, whether you're talking career or volunteer. And so it's really easy to look the other way at this. And it takes someone with strong leadership skills and strong vision to see this through and to make the medical program what it can be. And sometimes it takes a tragedy to force a leader's hand in this, but I think that with 50% up to 50% of firefighter fatalities being attributed in some way to cardiac and stroke type incidents, that this is one of those things that fire service leadership has to buy into, and it's not going to be the easiest thing, but it is doable, and there's a lot of success stories out there. I know even from Providence where guys have been found to have heart conditions or even cancer and have been able to get their medical problems squared away and resume their job as firefighters and stay on the job another 10, 15, 20 years after a condition has been diagnosed. But if it hadn't been diagnosed, we probably would have been having a funeral for them in a relatively short time. So it's a leadership issue, and it's something that fire service leaders need to take seriously.
John.
Yeah, thanks, Brad. I think there's a lot of standard out there already, and I would encourage departments to follow the standard. There's a lot of policy out there, and I would encourage departments to find a policy that fits their needs, meets the needs of their organization, and follows the standards. I think Kurt hit the nail on the head. It's a leadership issue. It can be problematic because, you know, how can you tell a firefighter that they can't work there anymore when it's their, you know, their life choice, and you know, we want to do everything we can to make sure that firefighters are employed, but they also stay healthy. I think that as attorneys, it's incumbent on us to make sure that as a risk manager in the organization, that the organization takes a look at those particular risks and what can they do to work with the firefighter organization, elected officials, physicians, to ensure you know the firefighters are healthy. And again, it goes back to there's a lot of good models out there. You know, us four and, you know, hundreds of others are interested in long-term support of firefighters. There's a lot of organizations out there that can help. We just want to make sure that we don't have to defend a fire department because, you know, they bury their head in the sand and said, well, it's not going to ever happen to us, because that's when exactly when it happens to you is when you are kind of shying away from the issue. And I think this is an issue that needs to be taken head-on as the statistics are looking at always, like Kurt said, almost up to 50% of our firefighters die every year from heart and stroke and what I would classify as correctable medical conditions.
And I want to kind of end with a little bit off of what John says. I think it's great that in this forum, four of us are talking about issues important to the fire service. And, you know, if it needs to be the lawyers who add just one more reason why we need to solve the health problem of the fire service and emergency services, and if there's something that we can do that maybe is just pushing the chief or the leadership one step closer to solving this problem, that I'm very glad that, you know, this forum and with the Fire Engineering's Fire Service Court Radio, that we're using this forum to, you know, move that issue again to the forefront. And maybe we're the last thing that somebody needs to hear before they say, you know what, I'm not going to put this department at risk. I'm not going to put the municipality at risk or the firefighters at risk. We're going to take this as not just a physical issue or a moral issue or the right thing to do, but it's a legal issue as well. And I'm really glad that we are doing some social good. If lawyers can do that, that's what we've committed ourselves to do here. And I want to thank you all for participating in this show. If you would like to listen to any of us, or hopefully all of us, you can see us in person at FDIC 2010. We are each speaking on various legal issues throughout the week, and some of us are moderating other panels, John on diversity and I on firefighter safety. We will all be around all week, and then you can probably find us at one of the local restaurants. I'm surely doing nothing else other than discussing important legal issues. But we want to thank you for listening to us. On behalf of Kurt, Chip, John, and myself, Brad Pinsky, I look forward to seeing you all again on our next radio show. Thank you very much, and have a good afternoon.